Such a strange thing. I mean, it's, there'll be times where you succeed and there are times that you fail. So wasting your time doubting whether you're going to be successful or not is pointless. It is. I mean, you just put one foot in front of the other, you control what you can't control, and then you see what the outcome is. Right? If you win, great, you're going to have to wake up the next day and do the journey over again. If you lose, it sucks, but you're going to have to wake up the next day and do the journey all over again anyway. Right? So it's really pointless to sit here and debate or have doubt or this, that, and the other. You train as hard as you can, and you step out there and you let it flow.
How much did the losses bother you?
Well, they bothered me, but then I was able to let them go.
Big losses, championship losses, Pistons 2004.
Yeah, you let them go. What I did is I learned from them.
Final match of the night in Baraboo from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, Reginald Huang.
So Raymond, one thing that stands out about him during his qualifications, not only was he number one seeded, he shot a monster 575 qualification score. I think that's a new record for Baraboo in the qualifications, if I'm not mistaken. Raymond takes it. Here we go.
Wow.
2024 Lancaster champion Raymond Huang shows up first time at the tournament and walks out with glory. Look at that. That was a show, baby. This is Baraboo.
Congratulations across the board from his competitor. Under all that enormous pressure, the last couple ends, I have never seen somebody take more deep breaths. He's a little warm right now, but for Raymond Huang, he comes down to the States and he conquers the world's best with an unbelievable qualification score, marched his way to the number one seed, and now walks away victorious as the 2024 Lancaster Archery Classic Baraboo champion.
Looks like we're pretty good. We are live on the Baraboo Project group. In typical fashion, we will let things build up here. I'm here with a former podium shooter, Mr. John Demmer. Thanks for joining us, John. I'm glad you were able to take a break from this miserable weather we're getting here in Pennsylvania. For once, Raymond and I were messaging because we got people out of power everywhere right now in my region of Pennsylvania. I had to go to my mother-in-law's house. They were out of power. We went up there and I'm like messaging Raymond. I'm like, yo, like we might start a little bit late. Internet's been in and out all day. And he's like, yeah, here's a picture outside and there's like grass and there's sun shining. It doesn't look too bad. And he's like, yeah, and I'm in Canada.
Yeah, like, we had no snow and sunshine today.
That is crazy. Because usually it's exactly the opposite between me and you. You get hammered, I get nothing. We got
24 hours ago, they were saying that we could get up to 24 inches or 12 inches. Then we woke up and then right before we went to bed, they said maybe nothing. And we wake up and there was a dusting and sun came out and it was all gone.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We got your snow. That's what we got down here. And it was wet and heavy. I was telling Raymond, I think we were 10. Did I say 10 calls in? I counted them on the day for the fire department and just all kinds of craziness. But Raymond, welcome to the Baraboo Project, man. I don't know if I have to tell everyone your real first name because everybody knows you as Reggie, thanks to PJ Riley.
Yeah, PJ's created a real monster.
He has. Did you get to watch the episode I did with him and Matt Zernzak by chance?
I did. And yeah. I really wish there was a camera on Matt. I would have paid to see that one.
Oh my gosh, he was going nuts. Yeah, he was going nuts for sure. Matt's very good in that role. And I posted it to the story on Facebook. Did you see that I overlapped Matt's audio with the Joe Rogan?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. That was really good. Just like Joe Rogan freaking out, holding everyone back.
It's funny. Yeah. It's good stuff. But anyways, man, welcome. Welcome to the Baraboo Project. Even though everybody pretty much knows who you are, just give us the spiel. Like, you know, name, where you're from, where you shoot out of, all that stuff.
So Raymond Huang, Vancouver, BC. I do a lot of my shooting and training at Richmond Brawn and Gun Club, also the Burnaby Lake Archery Field in Burnaby, BC. And Richmond Brawn and Gun Club, not to mistaken us for the one in Washington. Apparently there is another Richmond Brawn and Gun Club and we get mixed up all the time. I've had people messaging me and show me a picture of, hey, is this your club? And no, we are in Richmond, BC, Canada. And I am sponsored by Borman's Archery. They've been really good to me in my journey throughout archery. And when I've had hiccups in my own training, you know, I hit a hard plateau at one point. They were an invaluable resource just to help me kind of get through that. Yeah.
Nice. So speaking of that journey, and that's something that we always try to hit on, can you just give a rundown of like, what is your archery journey? Because even though like, I think I should say on the fringe, a lot of us did know who you are. I know I've seen your posts. I told you that like when I first met you at the Classic, I was like I knew that you were who you were, but seeing you in person and watching that qualification score, I was like, definitely the real deal. Just give us some background. Like, how did you get started in archery in general and what brought you to bare bow?
Well, and to touch base on what you were saying about, you know, being on the fringes, a lot of times I do kind of try and stay off social media. I'm in a bunch of different forums and groups.
Yeah, that's good.
And, you know, everyone has their opinions on how to address things. A lot of times if someone has an issue, I'll actually just personally message them and be like, hey, this is, I've had that experience. This is why I did. Hopefully it helps. Have a little bit of like side chats, right? But as far as archery goes, like never really thought about it. I mean, everyone knows Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Everyone's, I think, watch those cartoons. But one day I was done work early. A friend of mine was shooting before we were supposed to have a group dinner. So I went to watch him shoot. Looked like it was fun and I started feeling a little bit of curiosity. So I asked the owner, hey, can I shoot too? I know it was supposed to be some kind of a members only night. The owner said, yeah, it's fine. Give me a quick lesson. And I started shooting. I think at that time I was a little bit more instinctive than anything else.
Mm.
But what I did find was aiming an arrow is the same thing in my head anyways as shooting a paintball marker. And I used to love paintball.
Okay.
After that, I dove in deep. I think from the next 2 months, if not three, I was shooting anywhere from 4 to 5 nights a week, 2 hours a day. I just fell in love with it and picked up a bow within months. And that's when the multiple bow syndrome started. started my collection, picked up secondhand gear from other archery members of our clubs and played with things until I found what I liked.
Yeah. Was it bare bow from the word go?
I didn't know what bare bow was.
Okay.
So like everyone else, like my first bow was the PSC Nighthawk or a variant of it. I saw like the club I go to is heavily influenced by Olympic Recurve. And so like I'm seeing all that stuff. I'm seeing the bow swings, like that's really cool. But I also realized how much time it took them to set up and tear down. And after watching some videos, of course I found the Lancaster Classics. And from there, I was like, yeah, bare bow. That's what I want to do. Has all the cool toys, but I don't have like half an hour to an hour of setup to do. And yeah, that's how bare bow started. Picked up a riser, picked up some limbs. And coincidentally, my first riser was actually a Hoyt.
Oh.
Well, I guess, sorry, first serious riser, quote, air quotes. outside the PSC Nighthawk, I picked up a Hoyt Sitori in the 21-inch. And then, That's what I shot for probably the next 6 months before I upgraded again.
Nice. I'll say the you said you were shooting 4 or 5 nights a week. Did that continue right up to the classic?
No.
Oh, okay.
That was when I first started, and that was in December of 2018.
Okay.
Slowly I started to like kind of cut back on my shooting, right? I mean, life, you know, work, family, kids. I decided I was going to be a little bit more serious into archery in 2019 December, so about a year after shooting. I did a lot of prep work to do my first indoor nationals 3D shoot, which was held in it was going to be held in Chilliwack, BC, which is about an hour drive from where I am. Of course, that was in March 2020 when COVID kind of shut everything down. So that led to about a year and a half break from archery, focused on work, focused on my family. And when everything started opening up again, that's when I started kind of getting back into archery. It was a little tough at first because I was at one point shooting I had 51.5 pounds on the fingers. So a year and a half of not shooting and then coming back to it, I had the bow down and I was shooting probably about 36, 38 pounds.
Yeah. While you're kind of hinting on that, what is your actual setup? I have an idea of everything, but what was your full setup then that you shot at this past classic?
So at this classic, I was shooting the Hoyt XD riser with the Axia maple limbs.
Okay.
Yeah. Biter plunger, AE, I think it's Free Flight Elite,
mm-hmm.
Rest. During Lancaster's, I actually said the wrong rest. I was looking at my tab. I'm like, yeah, it's a sniper tab, and that's what I'm thinking. But of course, I said sniper rest.
Oh,
yeah, but it's a AE rest with, and I'm running a sniper tab. I like that little wire system where you can kind of fine tune, put everything where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That way, I don't have to look at a whole set of lines and remember which is my starting point and count from there.
Arrows.
Arrows RX-723s. And I'm running Top Hat 180 grain points, Ozark Target Max 4.5 inch with the Eagle tips, and then Biter Nox. And it is worth mentioning that, and it's not because I've been given the sponsorship, but I did, as soon as I got home, I actually switched over to the Wujak factory plunger, their Revo.
Okay.
What I did notice was my groups all tightened up. I switched it over. I matched the two plungers, switched it over, and I was hitting more tens and more X's.
Really?
So it's
interesting. Is that something new for you then?
It's new to me. I actually was handed the plunger to play with on day one of a Vegas shoot. So okay. I've done my shoot. Bumped into the guy, we were chatting for a while, he gave me the plunger to play with. He's like, yeah, you know, should use it for day two and day three, hang on to it. And I mean, just trying to be a responsible athlete, I didn't want to make any gear changes.
Yeah.
A part of me kind of regrets it because I did have noticeable groups already, improvement in my groups once I started playing with that plunger.
Right, yeah. Interesting. Did,
So a what plunger?
The plunger. It's the Wujak factory Revo. Revo, Revo.
I never heard.
They showcased the plunger last year at Vegas. And it was actually released in March. Yeah, it's a big plunger. Really cool looking. It's a big plunger.
Interesting.
But it does the job, and it's in, yeah, I've had nothing but good results from it so far.
Any particular features outside of the realm of a normal plunger that, or just you think tolerances or springs or whatever, high quality parts, what's the details on it?
Well, it has an adjustable center rest, center adjustment, okay. Right?
Yep, that helps.
Which, yep. Yeah, because I know a lot of bareboat archers, they do like, you know, they turn their plungers to kind of get lefts and rights,
yep.
To alter lefts and rights. I get it, but I'm not yet in full agreement with it, only because, you know, plunger's done for tuning, right? You adjust it for tuning, and moving it left and right kind of throws it off tune, in my experience.
Right.
So having that adjustable center shot is pretty awesome. As well, you can micro adjust the spring tension. It's got right. 20 clicks on it versus the 10 on biters.
Okay.
The color and the machine work machining on it is absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. So it was an easy
interested
switch.
In learning more. There's a couple plunger companies out there that have the adjustable center shot now. I have not tried one.
Does that knob I see it's got like a little O-ring on it. Does that ever vibrate loose?
So there, I have experienced a little bit of vibrations that will make it come loose a little bit. I've experienced the same with the AAE. It hasn't been enough for me to turn me away from it at all. And prior to accepting the sponsorship, this was something I was already aware of.
Yeah.
It's outside of like using a biter with that, you know, the biter wrench to really crank that thing tight. I've always experienced having plungers vibrating loose. So it's not something that's new to me.
Would that be the one?
That would be the one.
Shout out to Lancaster Archery, one of our sponsors. Shameless plug.
Yeah.
The Blue Jack Revo Cushion Plunger.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. Everyone I've showed this to side by side with a biter has agreed that that plunger is very, very smooth.
Interesting. I have never even heard of it. So I am extremely curious.
Hey, aren't you glad I had a follow-up question on the plunger?
Dude, you are Johnny on the spot. You are such a better co-host than you are as an arrow caller on your own target.
I'm the shooter.
So you know what? Don't send John over to be your arrow advocate.
Yes, do not. Well, no, he's a great arrow advocate if he's the advocate for you.
Okay.
You don't want him to be the advocate for the person you're shooting against. speaking from experience. No, just busting somebody's butt. That's an interesting looking plunger. I definitely am intrigued to learn more about it for sure.
I actually have an order like halfway built with Lancaster now for indoor nationals. I might throw one of these things in the shopping cart. the blue one looks pretty sweet, I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, wait until after this podcast before you hit purchase, and we'll chat.
And one other feature that actually has, so like with most plungers, if you need to change the piston pin, you have to disassemble everything and pull it out.
Yeah.
Right. With this one, the pin actually is removed from the inside, from the outside.
Oh.
Yeah. So you can actually, so I've never had any experience with it backing out on me. So again, that's, how well it's the tolerance is.
Yeah.
You can so if you grab the pin, the plunger piston itself, you can unscrew it with your fingers, and then you just kind of hand tighten it back in, and this allows you to, if you have any issues with that pin, you can quickly swap it out.
Interesting.
Right? Easy, fast maintenance. They have like a couple different pins for carbon and aluminum arrows.
Okay.
Yeah.
And very nice, man.
Yeah. It's been really fun playing with it.
Since you've come back from Vegas, and you've had a chance to nuts around with that, groups got tighter, and you feel like there's more consistency there?
Oh, definitely. I almost finally shot a 6 for 60. It's like a pin, I think, from either World Archery or Archery Canada. You have to shoot 3-6 consecutive arrows and get 60 points.
Yes.
In one of my groupings, I went XX10 on a 3-spot. And then on the round right after that, I shot at 10-10-9. And that was really just me getting a little excited and not fully expanding. but I missed that 10 by just a hair.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's been producing some pretty awesome results for me. So I am very excited to be representing them and to be running this plunger for this coming year.
Yeah, good stuff, man. And congratulations. Isn't it amazing how quickly things change? You know, you go from just a guy that enjoys the sport, shooting barebow, trying to be competitive to, hey, did you get a phone call from Steve, by the way?
I got an email from him.
You got an email? Okay.
Yeah. So we got to chat a little bit.
All right. Good. Yeah. Good. Steve Anderson from Hoyt, contacted Reggie. Reginald, I should say, Mr. Raymond. And he actually texted me and he was like, what's that? He goes, hey, do you know it Raymond or Reggie or what's his name? He's like, I know I saw it, but I just wanted to make sure, because a lot was going on. And the whole time you were shooting, Steve was like, this guy is incredible. He's texting me while you were shooting, like through your matches, and just laughing at barebow. He's like, I don't think he's ever, and Steve's coming on a podcast here in a couple of weeks, but I don't think Steve's a big compound guy. He's always been a compound guy. He's always worked for, he worked for Easton for a long time, moved over to Hoyt, and like, he's starting to be immersed in more of everything because of his role as the pro staff manager. While Doug Denton is our recurve pro staff manager, Steve handles a lot of the social media. He handles all the social media, I think, most of it anyways. And a lot of like the outreach stuff and like the like contingency checks. Like I think he takes a lot of things under his wing, but he was like, this is incredible. Like the whole experience. Cause if you watch, I don't know if you watched any more or stuck around for any of the other shoot-ups, you watch the other shoot-ups, it's not the same atmosphere in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it's quite different. I went back to the Lancaster, or I went back to the event center to watch the Olympic recurves in the morning. And I mean, those guys shoot phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right. Like they're just knocking out tens and X's, and you don't get the same vibe. I mean, you can shoot a 9 in barebow and the crowd goes wild. These 6s, I don't know. Apparently they don't really like them. But yeah, there's just nonstop support from the audience, no matter what you end up doing. Right. And the crazy part is it's not just barebow archers in there. You have kids and parents and other archers in there, compound, recurve, juniors, masters, seniors, and they're just all there for the barebow show.
Yeah. For real. Yeah. That's not an incorrect statement. But it's definitely changed over the years, wouldn't you say, John? I think the finals have changed dramatically over the last, 5, 6, 7 years. From the beginning to lights on and down at the little corner there, to what it is now.
They had the one year they had like the side camera on the right hand side was pretty close into the right hand shooter's view, almost like just to the right of the target. That used to be an issue in the past where you didn't want to shoot from the right hand side, but now it's not so big of a deal anymore. They've kind of, I wouldn't say they perfected it, but they've come pretty close.
Yeah. Well, even last year, that camera on the right side was pretty close to that platform. Like, and they're swinging that camera by while you're shooting and it's moving around. But I mean, it's definitely, it has evolved into a well-oiled machine for sure. The only thing they were missing was cameras on Matt Zernzek and Greg White. That's the only thing they were missing. They need to keep cameras.
We don't need to see Matt or Greg.
I knew you were going to say that. Listen, I don't disagree with you, but that moment.
Matt's got to shoot better so we can see him properly.
Yes, that would be pretty awesome too. That definitely would be. It's tough, man. It's tough. Kudos to Matt, because Matt does a lot for our community. He does a lot with the push. And Like he's immersed in that and he has to be, but it's so tough to juggle it all, but he's a stone cold killer. I mean, the guy fills more tags in hunting season than most traditional archers. That's for more than most compound shooters, to be completely honest with you. You know, so I guess it's just more proof though that target archery is harder than hunting, wouldn't you say, John?
Maybe I'll have to ask Steve about that one. He might have a different opinion.
Maybe. I don't know. Kelsey Hudson, Matt's wife, commented. She said, I came at the wrong time. When you said we don't need to see Matt, he needs to shoot better. She thought we were talking about her husband. Kelsey, you're not exactly wrong to think of your husband that way. Get on him. We all know that you're the boss. Get on him about that.
Well, Matt was a classic example of why it's so hard to reach the final stage. Like he just ran into the wrong person at the wrong time.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
And it happens.
Talking about running into the wrong person at the wrong time. I mean, I was looking when they finally set those tables to see who we're shooting against. Who I'm looking at this thing. It's like, geez, there's names everywhere. No one had it easy. I'm looking at mine like, okay, in what world do I have to shoot against Joel Turner?
Yeah.
If I seed first, it's that in itself was like shooting the finals.
Don't worry, Ray. The rest of us were surprised to see Joel shooting against you too.
Made for
all love Joel's all love is just a joke. We bust on each other quite often. I don't want to go that far into the discussion just yet, because we have some other things that I want to knock off the checklist. So let's pause that direction for a moment, and let's go back to Raymond's kind of build up to the classic over the last couple of months, and like, what are some key things that you did? What did your practice schedule look like? What were things that you were, I want to talk about like your decision to shoot a three spot. We talked about it. I already know, but I want you to put it out there for the masses. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about kind of also quick question. People that don't know or that weren't at the classic, you ended up shooting with the compound people.
Yeah.
Which was that planned or not planned? How did that come up?
So, I mean, I assumed I was going to shoot with all the other bareboat archers and be that guy again with a three spot. Someone posted up a chart of all the bareboat archers in which their target assignments. I didn't actually even realize it. I thought I was shooting at 113C or, 113C.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And it was Lisa Yu and one of my teammates that pointed out, it's like, hey, you might want to figure out why you're shooting on target 3C. So I looked at it again. It's like, maybe it's a typo. I contacted Lancasters and they told me it's because I chose to shoot a three spot. Might also have to do with the fact that I picked the wrong day when I initially signed up. Originally, I was going to shoot on Thursday for my qualifications. And I realized, well, I'm traveling. I should, I'd like that extra day of recovery and just kind of like maintenance in my shot. So what ended up happening was I called in and they were able to find me the spot on Friday. And so I was
that's probably what it was.
Yeah. And they did tell me that they like to try and keep all the three spots together and all the single spots together.
Yeah. That's not true anymore because they're not vertical anymore.
Yeah. So there are other archers that compete in a high level that were telling me there is an advantage or disadvantage to having a different target face there, right? Some archers might find it distracting, but it can become advantageous to whoever's shooting above or below you because it makes it easier for them to identify their own target.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, how big of a difference that makes, I don't know.
Yeah.
Shooting a three spot, I still missed and hit a single spot thinking that was my target. So, I did that in Vegas day one.
He shot a three spot and shot a single spot the wrong target.
Oh my gosh. That was a Reginald moment for sure.
Definitely. But let's be fair about this. So I was shooting top to begin with. And then during the switch, I got moved to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys, for those that understand, that know the target order, target one is the bottom left, target two is the top, and then target three is the bottom right. I used to shoot in the order of 3-1-2. So my top target is where I finish. I have a little bit of a top down draw cycle. So I'm coming down and I see gold. It's the top target. So I don't have to, you know, I'm not going to be looking at any other targets. I see that gold and I let it go. And it's not as if it was a golden go moment. It's just, I saw that gold. I lined everything up. Everything felt right. Let the arrow go. Beautiful gold shot. I turn around and the archer tells me, "You shot my target." I look, I turn around, I look, and I died. Like, it's just everything floods. And it's like, dude, you hit a single spot target when you're shooting a three spot. not to mention, I just lost 9 points. So, yeah, they shut the line up. They shut the line, and they pulled my arrow. And then the other archer was really distracted because there's this, like, she was shooting skinnies, and I'm shooting 23s. So there's this giant gaping hole in her target now. The whole situation has got her flustered. And I remember we tied in score that round, right? Her three arrows, she was so distracted that she ended up getting the 18 or 19 that I shot with her three arrows. I felt so bad after that.
Yeah. But
I mean, the past is the past. We'll let it go. We never, you know, let's not think about that miss on the wrong target face.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, that's, let's not, and I don't want to embarrass that person either or whatever in regards to that score, but, you know, or whatever the circumstances may be. Stuff happens, weird stuff happens, can't predict it. It's, you know, it's no big deal, but it's still funny. It's funny for us. We're allowed to laugh at you because you shot the wrong target because we can, and it's funny, but we don't want to poke fun at the wrong people.
No.
So you did shoot a three spot for your qualification round. What was your qualification score for the first 60 arrows of the classic?
It was in the 574,
I think.
574, I think. Okay. Yeah, 284 was your first day, something like that. Let me look.
Yeah, I don't quite remember how everything averaged out because I always convert everything back to like world archery.
No,
So without the X's considered as 11s, it works out to be like shooting a 280 and then a 279.
Right. Yeah. That's stellar, by the way.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it's nice to be able to put that out on a competition score.
Let me see here. Oh, it doesn't show your score. Stupid. I went to go to Archers. So they used to use the Archers app for the classic. And I guess, John, maybe you know why. I don't know why, but they this might have your score. Let me look.
Yeah, it sucks because you used to be able to just go on your app and look at all your past scores and your past score. If you shot in the tournament, you can flip through everybody's scorecard in that whole tournament,
and it shows you like arrows per arrow score average, the whole bit, you know. And Sanyo just isn't quite as user friendly. But I wonder if there's a reason that they had to use it this time around that I'm wondering. So yeah, 574, 15 11s, 12 10s, as the number one qualifier, first time at the classic, correct?
First time at the classics,
and you know, so let's talk about that first, the month or two before the classic. Like, what were you doing to prepare yourself to shoot in this tournament, because the scores were there? Where were you mentally, and what were you doing to kind of reinforce that I'm ready for this is what I'm going to do?
So we touched based on it a little bit in our conversations over text. A big component of what I do, and I focus on this as much as I can, it's rest and recovery. So my preparation for Lancasters actually starts mid-September. Mid-September, we have it's our final outdoor scored event. And from there, I typically take a 1 to 2 month break. I don't touch my bows. I'll still do like range officer duties at my club. I'll do a little bit of instructing, things like that. But the only arrows I shoot are just to kind of show people how to do something. At no point do I touch my own bows or my own gear. So after about a month and a bit of rest, I started setting up my gear again, picked up my bow. I decided to go with the XD because in playing with it and experimenting, I found that it shot really, really smooth. I didn't lose as much speed. Last year, my setup was a much larger setup. It was a 75 ammo bow. I did find that it was less forgiving when I underdrew or overdrew. So this year I went with the 70 ammo Hoyt Formula XD. I love this riser. I can't wait until Hoyt puts out a 27 inch.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, well, I figure you got to keep plugging that and get everyone all excited about it. And so they can just keep messaging Hoyt about making that 27 exceed.
Yeah, I've already had that conversation. I'm not going to say it couldn't potentially happen, but man, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You're right about the XD.
Yeah.
And John's kind of going through that, like right now, like John's shooting primarily XD. And yeah. It's just, there's something about it. There's something about that riser that is really, really, really consistent.
It's efficient. It's a 70 ammo bow that feels like a 72, but it gives you the speed of a 70.
Yeah.
Right. It's until I really put the time into a formula system, I really didn't know what I was missing out.
Yeah. On.
Yeah. So anyways, I sidetrack, it's a month of like just kind of prepping my gear and picking out what I want. I did switch tabs this year. So in September, late September, October, I ordered my new tabs and then kind of broken down, figured it out, and then customized it to what I thought would work.
Mm-hmm.
And between October to December, it's really fine-tuning the tab, you know, getting the right leather that I want. And turns out Cordovan is the way to go. Double it. So I have a double air Cordovan on that with like a 1.4 millimeter rubber gasket material in between. Despite all the protection I have, I still have calluses on my fingers from shooting. I went with a kind of a high volume shooting to a low volume shooting for preparation. So that again started mostly in early December. I'm shooting anywhere from 400 to 600 arrows a week. And these arrows are always in a prolonged time frame. I'll typically try to only shoot about, I don't know, maybe 50 arrows an hour or something. So it's a lot of going into archery, getting other things in life taken care of, and then coming back to it. I think my longest day for shooting, if I can find the time, it'll be like maybe a 4 hour shooting session where I'm shooting maybe 200 arrows, right? And that'll be a high volume day. So low and slow, key component, as we've touched base before, it's about recovery. It's about the health of your body. So shooting low volume, but high quality arrows.
Consistently right up until the end. Like, how many days a week are you putting in that volume then?
So I'll do like a week of maybe 500 to 600, and then I'll do a secondary week. The week after that, I'll do 300 to 400 tops, right? And a lot of it, I try not to stick to that number consistently. Like, mm-hmm. I let my body tell me what's going on. Sometimes your shoulder's just angry with you. And you got to take a couple days off or just work on something else.
Yeah.
So that this kind of training goes on until January. In January, it's a lot of figuring out little issues that I'm having, right? In January, it was my release. Something was not right. My hand, like the shots felt good, but I knew something was wrong. So I had other archers watch and shoot, or I'll put up a mirror recording so that I can see what's going on. And my hand was just flying off my face. All right. On that release, it's just like, bam. Everything seems to stay tight, but that hand just kept popping out. So I spent many arrows trying to correct that and figuring it out. Turns out that the Olympic anchor actually is just superior. I was just playing with a friend's Olympic recurve, and you know, I don't feel like I did anything differently, but that shot, that first arrow broke different. And I turned around and asked my friend, he's like, yeah, that was like perfectly clean. Your hand didn't come out or anything. I did nothing different. Apparently my face was in the way. So it's just kind of navigating and figuring out how, despite my face being in the way of my release, how am I going to break that release so that my hand can stay as tight as possible? And yeah, that was January. Low arrow counts. We're talking about like 200 arrows a week max. The final week going into before Lancaster's, I did post one of my final training scores. And yeah, after that, it was just shooting some maintenance arrows. We're talking 24 to 40 arrows, maybe, right? Just enough so that muscles feel good. I maintain my form and I can maintain my focus. And then Lancaster's.
Yeah, good. No, I mean, it's a very descriptive and thorough explanation of like what you were doing. I mean, your focus on form is obviously something that paid dividends for you. And I think that's a crucial point. I mean, John, would you agree? Like sometimes that's where you just got to mentally fall back into, you know, in that situation.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, when you get to a big shoot, you just fall back onto everything that you've done in training the last, you know, whatever month, 2 months, 3 months. But you have to build that good foundation so you can fall back on it.
Yeah. He certainly did that with the volume of arrows and kind of focusing on that time period of, and I think in some ways you did something similar to what John often talks about, like, you know, start shooting and then tunes change because your form gets a little bit better and then fix the form and then maybe the tune changes again. And then finally around that time, it starts to all fall into place where you're really kind of starting to peak at that right moment. And it sounds like that's kind of what you did. And then just paid attention to the volume and how you physically felt and, you know, followed that right into, kept that momentum per se. Kept that momentum right into the classic, and your brain was in the right spot. And I don't think, did I hear you correctly? You said that the Olympic anchor was superior. Did you say that?
Oh yeah, no, I did. Bearable, it's not necessarily the greatest.
But it is definitely easier to get into alignment underneath, totally underneath. And have that fluid straight tension and direction straight back. You're 100% correct. I'm not, you know.
And it's like a in general thing. Like the skeletal alignment that you can get.
Yeah.
There's nothing in your way when you're releasing.
Yeah.
But for barebow, like I've thought about using the under chin anchor for barebow. I can think of a lot of reasons not to use it as well. For me to use under chin anchor, I would have to either shoot a lower poundage on my fingers so that I can get that knock closer to my hand again. And at that point, the elements become a problem.
Agreed.
I would not switch my anchor for outdoor. I like the face anchor and it keeps my hand really close to the knock, gives me the speed that I need so that the elements don't affect me.
There was a post the other day in one of the groups about it, and you know, if that's what you have to do to hit 50 meters or whatever, so be it. It's not,
yes,
not the end of the world. I don't think it's optimal though. Like, being point on is an extremely important detail in bareboat to be like the all, but it is important and is very difficult to be point on at those shorter distances if you're an under the chin anchor, traditional Olympic anchor, or even just a lower anchor, like way, way down on the chin, like some other people tend to advocate for in some manner. But there's, you know, there's pros and cons to everything. I think we all, there's one thing if we all have learned is that, like, John Demmer doesn't shoot exactly the same as Raymond. Raymond doesn't shoot the same as Grayson. Grayson doesn't shoot the same as Dillinger. And I use those names frequently, but it's true. Like, not everybody's the same, and people still shoot extremely high-quality arrows in their own way. And we have to stop. Like, it's like the NTS conversation we talk about in America, that National Training System shot. I bit the bug of NTS, NTS, NTS because I went through the training and I was like, wanted to learn it. I wanted to know. I wanted that knowledge. But the fact of the matter still stands. Like, you don't all have to shoot exactly the same to be a high quality shooter. We, you know, but there is definitely, of all shooters that are high quality, like John and like everybody else, there's definitely qualities of a shot that are similar,
right? Yeah, I think we kind of all agree that there are ways to make life easier, right, with barebow. I don't think there's one way for everyone to do it. Barebow seems to be a very personalized thing, depending on the individual's body mechanics. And I mean, some guys are just really, the big burly guys are really strong, but their muscles are just, it gets in their way. So they can only move a certain way. And we have to adapt to that, whether it be the anchor or just the follow throughs a little bit differently. I think that's where barebows has been really fun. I see with like some other, with other classes of archery that there's a way to do this. With barebow, I don't think that there is one way of getting the perfection that you are trying to attain. And that kind of opens up barebow to a lot of more people.
Yeah, agreed completely. Even though it's a sidebar, little temporary derailment of our conversation. John, shut up.
I was going to send Raymond a text saying, hey, this is where we get off script. And frankly,
we're always off script. We're not, or that doesn't change. And I don't care. It never will. It is what it is. If people don't like it, hit unsubscribe. You can bounce. I don't give it. Anyway, moving on. So I guess, John, I know you talked a little bit. You had something about talking to Raymond. Let's talk about that topic of like coming in, things that you would say to people, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. We just wanted your perspective on the first time at like the Classic. You shot Vegas before, you mentioned that like last year, and again this year. If there was anything that you could give like somebody, you know, a piece of advice for coming for the first time or suggesting if they are on the fence to come or not to come, or something you would do differently the next time around.
I think first and foremost is that everyone that showed up is a winner. Anyone who thinks that they're not ready for this competition, you've already lost. You have to come to these events to be prepared. No matter how, like you guys have said, this is not my first big competition. I shot Vegas. Going into Vegas, there's a lot of things I just didn't know how to prepare for. And even though I had an idea of how to prepare for Lancasters, you know, the pressure that I'd have to face, the distractions I might have if I made it to the final stage, I did some training to prepare for that. But I mean, whether it worked or not, I still felt unprepared. The only way to actually do this is to go throw yourself in there and experience it.
Good. It's very good. So did you feel that way when you got up there on that stage? When you got up to the platform, that first end, did all of that stuff still stay, like, where were you at mentally on that scenario?
Oh,
when you first walked out and they said your name incorrectly, maybe that was a benefit for you. It probably broke the ice a little bit, distracted you from what was actually happening.
That was interesting because I was just behind the curtain and I was getting ready for them to call my name. And of course they called Reggie. At that point, it's just like, well, I'm the last person here and I'm pretty sure I was in first seat, so must be me. So, you walk out and get on stage. I think inadvertently, I've already had that preparation because, like I said, when, you know, my friends wouldn't let me live this down, that I was called Reggie, right? And as I've seen in your podcast, I have some great friends in archery. That's what keeps me in it. And it's like, and there's nonstop razzing.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if you guys do like flat field 3D archery, but it's just, you know, all the targets are laid out in a flat field and everyone comes up to the shooting line and you shoot. Sometimes I'm the last person up. Whether I'm slow or not, I'm that last person. And there's just a line of 50, 60 archers looking down that line, hooting, hollering. It's like, why are you so slow? Come on, let's just get this going. I want to go watch a hockey game after. So the level of attention that could cause pressure for me when I'm on that final stage, I'm almost kind of used to it.
Got it.
Just from all my friends razzing and having fun with us.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. There was a question in the comments here from one of our Patreon members, Richard Hall. He said, this is for Raymond. Does he do or did he get some mental management training at all? Seemed very calm and steady for his first Lancaster. Did you read any books, do anything on your own that kind of helped you prepare for that, or just strictly the atmosphere that you train in and the people you shoot with really attest to your calmness?
So I don't think there's any one thing that prepared me for this. But having my mentor, Brian Maxwell, you know, having him behind me, that was, you know, he was a pillar. He kept me cool, kept me calm, reminded me of my process. Again, so in the months coming into this tournament, we're all doing our training, but he cannot help himself but help other archers.
Nice.
So he did, we did time interval shooting, right? High pressure stuff, like 10 seconds to set up, 5 seconds to shoot. So we've done all that. And it comes down to, and it's hard not to get off topic sometimes, but
no, it's
it
comes okay.
down to everything that's there. The riser I shoot, the equipment that I have, I trust it. I set it up and I trust it. So I know that's not something I have to worry about. In training, I practice that form over and over again to a point where it's the fallback. How's that shot supposed to feel, right? You or we shoot and we memorize that feeling of a good shot, how it should break. And we just constantly try to repeat that. So when I'm on stage, it's kind of just like practicing. I'm just trying to mimic that good shot.
Yeah, right? It's good.
Nice, strong shot process. Goes back to that mantra, right?
Yeah, strong, no, that's good.
Smooth and tight.
I think the moment that everyone probably does want to hear about a little bit, though, is that arrow that Eric smoked to 12. I know what my reaction was. Everybody knows what Matty Z's reaction was. What was your reaction in that moment? And just talk to that point.
Well, when I shot that 11 for a 12-point lead, I thought right I was pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought I was pretty good. I figured I was in that one moment. I'm just at, so just before he shot that 12, I'm thinking the math. Okay, well, there's like he's hitting 15 X's out of 60 in qualifications. That's a less pressured scenario. So what we've got maybe odds of like 15-20% that he'll get this X. Yeah, he hit that X and I was in a little bit of disbelief. The realization that it's not over yet, we gotta keep going. And then the excitement of the fact, the realization, the excitement that he hit the bloody 12 on purpose.
Yeah.
I was happy for him. I remember looking across that stage and I'm thinking, you know what? Doesn't matter what happens now, we've both won. It's
well, the checks that are written say differently, but I mean, yeah, I hear what you're saying. It was all of Barbo won for a moment, for three arrows there. Everyone in that room felt away, and it's hard to explain it unless you were there, because you hitting that 11, then him coming back with the 12, and then that final arrow. Would you say that final arrow was as calm as the others, or just it was good enough to get the job done?
Final arrow was in that 9, right?
Yeah, it was a 9. Yeah,
it was just another arrow. I was just there to do a job and, yeah, and good. To let go of a string. Yeah, even after that 6, it was just another. It's the next arrow going there and do my job. Let go. Let the string escape my finger.
Yeah, it's good. It was fun to watch for sure. It was a show. I don't care what anybody says. It was a show. It was entertainment we've never seen before at the Classic in quite that. We've seen some really awesome stuff. Don't get me wrong, but my buddy there, the former podium shooter, he put on a run right before you, and there was like I was sitting next to Grace, and we're like, man, John's looking pretty smooth right now. And, you know, like seeing stuff like that, like that's exciting. Like seeing somebody just, we watched Dillinger do that stuff in the past, like just hits a, you know, a stride. And you were definitely in that mental zone for sure, right through to the end. It was pretty awesome to watch. John, do you have anything else that you wanted to chat with Mr. Raymond about? If you guys have any questions too, by the way, throw them in the comments before we log off with Raymond. And this Mick Chambers guy, I don't know who he is, but he keeps commenting stuff. You think he's a Canadian or something. He's awfully all over hockey and all this crap. I don't know who he is. Just playing Mick. Maybe. John, what do you think?
No, I think I'm good. I'm waiting for the after hours conversations.
Oh, well, don't worry, Ray. We always have conversations, especially about guys that go Canada A in the comments. Get out of here.
Yeah,
get out of here.
I don't think I said A enough.
No, you didn't say it at all. Don't let's not really? Start now. Let's not start now.
No, don't. No,
listen,
doubt.
You're. I want you to know, I think you're the first Canadian to come on the podcast. So shout out to you for that. We try to stay away from those types, but you're a different one. We're letting you slide.
He doesn't look or sound like your prototypical Canadian.
Which to us is literally Alex Melnick, but that's it.
Basically.
I think we're still trying to decide if we're going to keep him or not.
I don't blame you.
I have to send out.
He keeps coming down to the U.S. like a lot, so I don't know. I don't know what's happening there. We Mick Chambers already came to the U.S. We tried to give him back, and they won't let us. We tried.
Well, wouldn't let you, or we wouldn't take him back.
They wouldn't. Yeah, they said no. You keep him. We don't want him.
Yeah. No, Mick seems to be a cool guy, though.
Oh yeah. No.
Yeah. It's. It should be a lot of fun, I think, moving forward with Barbo. I'm still trying to analyze what happened in that shoot. And part of me, it's nothing against any of the other archers, but I really did want to see John on in that final stage shooting against me.
I tried. Was,
you were so close. You had my heart racing, man. You had my heart racing. I was thinking, it's like, oh man, it's just one more archer, just one more archer. That was a good run, though. That was absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, it's again, like we've said before, it's just anything just to even get on the stage, and then once you get on the stage, you're going to need some luck. You just got to run into the right person at the right time. Or I've seen matches where, gosh, you shoot against the person that shot the second highest score in the whole match or the whole round, and they get bounced. And I've seen guys shoot a sub 100 and move on and end up winning the thing, where, you know, he shot the second lowest, but he ran into the lowest at the right time. And I said, you just got to put yourself in position for a chance. That's all we're doing when we get up there. And, you know, don't make a mistake where you take yourself out of it, but, you know, just put yourself into the best position possible and roll a dice and see how it plays out.
Yeah.
Sounds about right. Raymond, what's the future look like for you now with this? I mean, Lancaster and Vegas were success for you. Obviously, Lancaster was the pinnacle thus far for indoor. I know you asked about like our outdoor target, I think it was. Like, are you eyeing other tournaments? You planning to make some travel? I don't know what the Canadian national tournament scene necessarily looks like. Down here, outdoor target is a big deal for in America because of USATs and stuff like that. What's your focus, or do you know what direction is going to be field, or are you going to go for the Canadian national team? Where are you at with that?
So provincials, we have 3D, and then we do a provincial outdoor championships, which is field and outdoor target. It's 2 days. We shoot each course, you get your scores add together, and that decides who how you place. So there's the provincials, and then there's the national 3D field and outdoor target championships. That's a must for me because I qualified and I've been selected to shoot for the 3D national team. So Slovenia is in the works. If I can figure out my schedule and how I can train properly, I would like to do the world field championships as well. It's in Alberta, BC this year. It's in Alberta, Canada this year. So it'd be kind of nice to stay close to home and shoot that world.
Is that in Lac La Biche?
Yeah. Yeah. They did.
It's like the South Dakota of Canada. By the way.
Here it's buggy. I hear it's really buggy. So, yeah, it's up north there. It's supposed to be beautiful. Lots of great lakes, and the town's supposed to be really phenomenal. The venue's supposed to be just top notch. So if I can get prepped for that, I'll want to do that as well. Winning Lancaster's definitely helped. The little extra Barebow bonus from Hoyt definitely helps.
Congratulations on that, by the way, being the first to, well, on the men's side, I should say, Fawn got a little bit of extra as well. But to take that number one spot, it's a nice bonus. It's a big deal for a company like that to put their money where their mouth is, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, I would have shot all the gear despite, like, even if it wasn't for that bearable bonus. Everything just gelled perfectly, right? All the equipment worked. When they released the weight, I ordered it in, and I would have shot it regardless of that bonus, but that extra support definitely is appreciated.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's going to help you continue to compete the rest of the year and for maybe right up until Lancaster next year. Yeah. So I assume you plan to come back for Lancaster next year.
I don't know. I might have to just kind of take it and run with it and just like never give it back.
Like, yeah, go out on top and just be like, yeah. One and done. Came in. I, I saw when I won. I'm not coming back.
Yeah, no, I don't want to have to defend it, but I definitely will come back and try and defend that title.
Yeah, good.
It was a phenomenal shoot. I love that they put Barebow in the same limelight as every other category of archery.
Yeah.
It's really appreciated. It shouldn't be understated how much they do for Barebow and putting it where it is.
That's Rob Coffold, right, John?
Yeah. Yeah. That was his vision. Yeah.
Rob was the first person to walk up to you after you got done with your coach. He was the first person to be right there, you know, and I was standing right there sort of, and I said to Rob, before I even talked to you, I was like, Rob, that was your vision. That 12, the whole build up, the whole thing. Like, that's Rob Coffle. And if you guys that maybe some of you are watching this now and didn't watch the episode with Matt and PJ, like PJ talks about the history of what was the Christmas Classic all the way up through to that moment. And like, Rob Coffle has given Barebow the platform to be what it is to this day, and for it to be highlighted on an equal platform with everything else. And in no surprise, it has taken over. That tournament is the Super Bowl of Barebow archery. There's no question. I don't think it'll ever be duplicated in any way. Vegas is pretty big. Never been there myself yet. I probably will be there next year, but you know, it's not the same. It's just not the same. So, but anyways, dude, congratulations. It's just so, so awesome. You've been a humble champion and an amazing ambassador in this short amount of time. I love the fact that you got people coming on here thanking you for reaching out to them and reaching back to them and helping them. And, you know, you make the community stronger. You can't, we covered so much, so appreciate you so much and coming on here and right after getting home from Vegas and all that too. So
yeah, well, thank you for having me. And like you're saying, one of the biggest wins actually isn't technically winning Lancasters. It's just I've had a lot of people reaching out to me that I've motivated them to shoot again or just to train a little bit more. And I think ultimately that's the biggest win. It's just to grow the community and get archers out there.
Outstanding. Couldn't have said it any better. Thank you so much for coming on the Barebow Project. Appreciate it. John, former pro shooter.
Congrats again. Well done. Hopefully next year, it's going to be really, really hard to top what that whole thing was, but you know, hopefully we can keep upping it, because it's been every year. It's been kind of cool. Like every year seems to like trump the previous year. Maybe living in the moment, but yeah, it's hopefully next year we continue it.
Yeah. Perfect. John, couldn't have said any better. Job well done. You shot really well too, John. Maybe not.
I don't get my ugly mug on the thumbnail this year. No. It's going to be Eric and Raymond.
That was good. I'm working on a podcast with Eric and Lena hopefully soon. We've messaged about it as well. And like Lena's put on some amazing, amazing show there, winning, I think, 3 times, 4th, including before they had the final venue and stuff. But so yeah, it'd be good to have them. They're like a power couple in Barebow archery. The power couple in Barebow archery, if that's what you want to call it. So I saw there's a comment somebody just put in there, and I think there might be some validity to it. Cornelius McDonald said the 3-spot revolution begins. And I don't know if that's necessarily true, because like I've watched John shoot 3 spots for years. Grayson shoots 3 spots all the time. Now in major tournaments they weren't. But it depends on the arrow.
That's a false statement.
No, it's not. I watched you through 3 spots in multiple tournaments.
No, I mean, you know, yeah, we've shot them in multiple or big tournaments too.
Oh,
yeah. Usually it comes down to confidence at that time. But there was a time where Lancaster, you had to shoot a single. There was no choice.
Oh yeah, so that's right.
For like three or four years. The first year we had a choice. I shot three spot the first year. But then after that, I think it was mandatory. You had to shoot a single.
Yeah. That was when they had the vertical three spots and all of the single spots were together. And then occasionally they would mix, or they would only mix the vertical three spot with, yeah, like if there was a bale with two archers, they would put one on. That was the only way. Everything was
and segregated. The stage was mandatory single.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know when that changed. I don't know if it changed last year or was it this year, but I know for like 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years, it was mandatory.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the things, like, people shouldn't be afraid to shoot a three spot. I mean, like, once you get up to a certain level, how often do you shoot a 5, 4, 3, 2, or 1? Like, it shouldn't happen. Like, other than like a really bad pluck or something. And chances are those things aren't hitting anyway.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think at that level of competition, to be on that stage now, worrying about hitting a 5 is no longer really a thing. It can be very difficult to catch up when you're 4 or 5 points back, right? And whether or not three spot really catches, I mean, if people really think about it, and I'm surprised no one's mentioned it, that 6 was 7 or 8 millimeters out from me, like just out of the competition.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I nearly missed that target. I could not have recovered from that, not with Eric being on the other side.
Yeah. No, because barebow happens. I mean, yeah. I know what you're saying, but at the same time, you know, things happen. Like the swings in barebow potentially are so significant compared to compound. Like compound, a major catastrophe has to happen, but it's really compound is more of, I think they hit 12 in a row or 6 12s in a row, or I didn't watch the open shooting at all, the compound open, but they hit like, it was like, you know, 11 11 12 11 11 12 11 11 12, and they just did it all the way through, you know. And I'm not saying it's not impressive, it's still impressive, but it's just not as entertaining. And the likelihood that they're going to miss the whole target, you know, is just so slim. Whereas in barebow, especially with like you guys shooting three spots, I think everybody on every arrow, even though you're shooting well, is still a little bit on the edge of their seat. Like, holy crap, what did they miss? You know what I mean? Like,
Wirt gave me a bunch of crap afterwards. He said he wanted to come up and smack me upside the head when they put a three spot up. He's like, what are you doing? He's like yelling at his friend there. He's like, what the frick is he doing? Gives other people anxiety. Gotta love it.
Yeah, it does. It does. So, but the entertainment value in it too, you know, and you have to kind of, I don't know. I think I commend you guys. I think there's some validity too, like to having the confidence. Like, and we can talk about this before we kind of close this out. Raymond, when we first met, came over, like, I think it was right after your first half, and we were chatting a little bit, and where you said, you explained like exactly why you chose a three spot. So got for everybody's edification and why you shoot three spots so often. Can you just quick explain that?
Well, I think I touched base on a little bit earlier. We're not planning to hit anything outside of the red anyways. Right. There's the monetary part of it, just damaged arrows, even broken knocks add up. But the biggest thing was bounce outs. Every point counts. And if you track the scores on this stage, they keep going up, right? In my training, I figured I needed to be able to shoot 4 ends, 3 arrow ends, and I need to consistently be 110 plus. And to do that, those bounce outs matter. So shooting a three spot for me is a no-brainer. I'm there.
So like bounce outs, deflections, stuff like that.
Deflections, yeah. Like it's every point matters. I can't have those bounce outs or deflections cost me points. I think in the women's, and I haven't watched it in full detail yet, but someone hit their own knock and went from like a 9 to a 7 or a 10
correct.
To a 7.
Ava Jones. I was actually just going to bring that up. She would have, I think she may have beat Lena had that arrow because it hit, I think it hit, and then I might say incorrectly, well, look back. I think it hit an arrow that was in the 10. That arrow hit the knock, and the knock was clearly damaged and deflected to an 8 or a 7. I'm not sure which. And then Lena, I think, shot a 9. And that arrow could have been an 11 too. Who knows? But it was, that's exactly what happened.
So I don't know if anyone noticed this. I kind of wish they showed me shooting against Joel. Because if I had been shooting a single spot, I actually wouldn't have been on that stage. In the third end, we came to the third end tied. My first arrow was a high 9. I thought maybe there was something off. So I made an adjustment in my crawl and I shot bottom 9. Now that arrow landed on the bottom of that 9, completely vertical.
Mm.
My X was completely covered. Third arrow, top of X. Was not possible had I been shooting a single spot. In the fourth end, Joel beat me by 1 point. That X
was
allowed me to advance.
Yeah.
It was a tiebreaker, and it was what tied the end up, and it was the X that gave me the win.
Yeah.
So I couldn't have done this on a single spot. Literally could not have done this on a single spot.
Yeah. I think your approach is part of your mental game, and I think it's a great way to look at it, for sure. For sure. I think there's something there and people should pay attention to it. So, all right, gentlemen, it's been good. We've been on for quite a while. Raymond, congratulations once again. You've been an amazing guest, and you are definitely an ambassador already to Barebow. And just you keep being you, man, for sure. Things are going to go well. Hopefully you get that stuff started up there that we talked about and maybe get some coaching in or build up group lessons or whatever you do up there in Canada. I know you're tossing around some ideas. Whatever you can do to grow the sport is always going to be a good thing. So we wish you nothing but the best.
Last plug. I mean, I mentioned Borman's Archery, great supporter of the sport, great ambassador to the industry itself. We have Burnaby Archery Field, awesome archers out there. If you want to shoot with just world-class archers, Burnaby Archery Field. Same thing, Richmond Rod and Gun Club. We have great range officers, friendly staff, friendly archers that are there. And I have to give the appreciation to my mentor and, in this case, my coach. Brian Maxwell has been absolutely phenomenal throughout this whole trip. Just the support that he gave me, the training prior to it, it was invaluable. And sorry, shameless plug, I did get these hats made. I've had some interest in getting some of these hats. So if anyone's interested, let me know. It will help to support me in my archery journey this year. The final design is not quite there, but I kind of figured my name is Reggie. Because we can all be your Reggie. It's all about being there and giving it your all.
Well, the entrepreneurial spirit in this guy, I like it. I like it. I like it a lot.
I know what you're talking about.
I know. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Outstanding, man. Good stuff. If you guys want to follow Reggie, check him out on Facebook. Check out those pages and stuff and reach out to him if you want to get a hat. Although the guy just got a couple of big fat checks to help him with that goal. You just got to keep winning, man. That's all, right?
Yeah.
You're at the top now, so it's, there's a target on your back.
Technically, he's not anymore because of Vegas.
Ooh.
He's a has-been now.
He is a has-been. Has-been with a hat. Listen, man, I'll tell you this right now, dude. Listen, always remember, if you're ever on the podcast again, if we don't poke fun at you, there's a good chance that we don't like you. So
I've been saying that for the last like 4 years in archery.
Yeah.
If we don't make fun of you, it's because we don't like you.
There's probably a good chance we just don't want to talk to you.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, even up here, like we'll just go at each other all day long, and it's only because we consider them a friend.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, man. You have a good night. Right. Thank you so much for your patience and giving the Barrel Project opportunity to put your face and your story out there. Appreciate it. Congratulations once again.
Thank you.
Everyone else, it's been real. Peace out. Barrel Project out.